The Supreme Court has decided. Now, how do we move forward in an ethical fashion to make sure that we have a healthcare system that is just and humane? Hi, welcome to the Bioethics Channel, a production of the Center for Practical Bioethics. For more information about the center and its programs, visit practicalbioethics.org. practicalbioethics.org. Joining us today, John Carney, President, CEO of the Center for Practical Bioethics. Myra Christopher is the Kathleen Foley Chair in Pain and Palliative Care at the Center. And Terry Roselle is the Rosemary Flanagan Chair at the Center for Practical Bioethics. And we thought we would do this post-Supreme Court decision because a couple of years ago we had a podcast that focused on the passage of the law and how we were going to move forward. And a lot has happened since then, John Carney, and we have the Supreme Court ruling today. What does that mean as we start moving forward in an ethical fashion to create the kind of healthcare system that we need?
Well, I think, from the personal mandate perspective, it certainly reinforces the notion that we all have a personal responsibility and we all have an obligation not only to care for ourselves and making sure that we have health insurance coverage when we get sick, but also kind of reminds us of the importance of not only worrying about ourselves, but worrying about those that maybe are not so fortunate as we to have health insurance coverage from our employer or whatever. So I think it really reminds us of both of those things as being important. It's about what I need to do to be a better citizen and what I need to be thinking about in making sure that other people are cared for as well as I.
Myra, you as the former CEO of the Center for Practical Bioethics has been working on this issue for quite some time. Whenever I told you today that the Supreme Court had supported the Health Care Act, you raised your arms and said hooray or something like that. This means a lot to you, doesn't it?
It does. I cheered, Laurel, and you were referring to the center's work around the Affordable Care Patient Protection Act a few years ago. But actually, the center has been working on this issue almost from its very beginning. In fact, we participated in a statewide commission in the state of Kansas called the Commission on the Future of Healthcare in the late 80s when the states were very active. And we were talking about the states being the laboratory for experiment with regard to national legislation and healthcare reform. Interestingly, what was affirmed today looks very much like what the Kansas Commission proposed. When President Clinton was elected and everyone believed that because of the campaign he had run that we would have healthcare reform in conjunction with his administration, the states folded like a house of cards. And then, as we all know, the Clinton Commission, the Clintons' efforts to initiate health care reform met a dreadful end. So we then, again, with another new president, see that there is continued interest. And I have been really quite anxious that one more time in my life I would see our society step to the threshold to take the responsibilities that John articulated, but that for political reasons we would back away. So I feel very hopeful. This is only a beginning. People said at the time this was being introduced, it was only a beginning, but it is a positive step. And I must say that although none of us have seen the opinion yet, I'm very proud of this court and very proud of what I've heard with regard to Chief Justice Roberts.
Terry Roselle, what are your thoughts as you take a look at this ruling today, a landmark ruling by the U.S. Supreme Court?
I'll start more with my feelings than my thoughts. And I don't feel nearly as good about this as I thought that I would, because I guess I realize all the more how politicized healthcare has become in this country. And I don't know what will happen as a result yet of the Supreme Court's decision. I had hoped that perhaps this would settle things, and yet I was totally naive in that because, of course, it won't settle things. It fans the flames of further politicization and political rhetoric. I still long for the day when we could focus more on patient care than on political power and who has it.
John, Myra referenced it to some degree, touched on it, that this court ruling only protects the initial phase of health care reform, and that we still have much work to do around the issue of coverage, that even if fully implemented by 2014, there will still be millions of Americans without coverage.
I think that's a good reminder about the fact that this is just a first step, because you're actually right that it only is coverage for those that are currently able to actually purchase it or eligible to receive subsidies from the federal or state governments in order for them to be able to do it. So there will still be a number of people who have no coverage at all, and allowing some of those people to opt out simply because they don't want to have to purchase it. But what it does do is that it certainly expands the coverage to include a lot of people who would desperately want to have coverage or currently can't get coverage. And those are the people that I think, in terms of an issue around justice, that we owe it to ourselves and to them to make sure that those people receive the same kind of care and support that most of us who are, you know, relatively healthy or have insurance from our employers are able to do.
You know, John, I've heard you say many, many times that this is fundamentally about health insurance reform, not really health care reform. But it does seem to me that at least in our society and the way we're structured, that it was sort of logically necessary or prior to get this piece in place to begin what I think many people yearn for, a creation of a health delivery system that really focuses on health and well-being, not so much on disease and acute care needs as our current system does. So, you know, I think all of us have the same sentiments that we, or at least the three of us, that we are pleased to see that this has remained intact. However, we all know that there is so much work to be done to accomplish a healthy society that is just and humane. Terry, you should.
Yes, and I'm nodding my head, and the glass half empty part of me
has already expressed itself.
and then adding to that, I guess, is the difficulty of even getting to a first step is discouraging. It's discouraging. And so then how can we get to that larger piece of true health care reform, the delivery system reform, if we can't come together with something more than political rhetoric and for tat
but
on
Jack,
this piece?
Don't you think that the healthcare professionals will take more responsibility now? We just read the statement from the American Academy of Family Physicians and heard the jubilation that this will allow them to do that which they've been working on for a number of years now, creating medical homes and accountable care organizations and so forth. I want to believe that maybe this marks the end of some of the political politics taking this issue hostage, and that now professionals and others, policymakers and patients and their families, will have more opportunity to actively participate.
It depends on which professional you're talking to, which physician and which physician group. I was at a hospital this morning at the time that the announcement was made, and before I left that hospital, walking from one end to the other, I had conversations somewhat in depth with three different people, two of them physicians and one a chaplain. Thoughtful people,
good
people. All three of them on the full spectrum of response to this and what it means. And thoughtfully responding. And it was all over the board. So I don't know what physicians will do, what providers will do. It really depends on who you talk to.
But John,
I think the most important thing for me is, and this is why I consider it to be so hopeful, is looking back and seeing what all the consternation that came around the the subject of expanding or actually introducing Medicare in 1965, and all of the claims that they were going to repeal it and this was going too far and everything else, and the you know, what ruled the day was the fact that we cannot allow the elderly in America to live in poverty and die because they don't have healthcare treatment. And I think now, in 2012, we finally got back to, this isn't just about the elderly. These are about adults who can't get health insurance coverage, people who have conditions who can't get health insurance, about kids who need to be able to be cared for, and preventive medicine and everything else. That's why I find it so hopeful, is that it is just the beginning, but it says that what we did in 1965 for the elderly, we can now do for everybody else.
Well, you know, it'll be tough with 2012 being an election year for some civil discourse on this to move forward, but this is an opportunity for that, is it not? And the center will be stepping forward to take the lead on motivating us, is a good word, to seek that common ground.
So here's the glass half full. As we were discussing this 2 or 3 years ago also, if nothing else, the whole country is talking about health care and about those who are left out of the system such as it is. That's good. What comes of that? We will see. What has come of it already has some very good elements to it. And now we continue working and continue fostering the civil discourse that will ultimately result in something even better.
You know, yesterday I had a conversation with a young man who is anticipating attending medical school, and very bright, very concerned, thoughtful person who cares deeply about healthcare reform. And yesterday he told me that he was feeling very depressed because he was feeling that he lives in a country where new ideas, big ideas, there's not the political will to move forward in this country anymore. And he actually talked about that he was thinking maybe he needed to leave our country. So I can't wait to email him or call him this afternoon and to hear his thoughts about this.
And it's that young man and numerous others of his generation that frankly give me the greatest hope.
Yeah,
I'm rather disappointed with my boomer generation and extremely hopeful for our children.
Well, something that we talk about a lot in this regard is around the idea of societal obligations to those who are less fortunate. And so we can hope that perhaps the Supreme Court ruling motivates us to have that civil discussion so that we can discuss that more thoroughly. What do you think about that, John?
Well, I agree. I think that what I find most compelling about the reason we need to do this is that when I hear people stand up and tell stories about family members or acquaintances or fellow employees who have loved ones who can't get insurance, who have conditions for which they cannot afford treatment, when the folks who don't feel that way hear those stories, they fall silent. And I'm thinking, there but for the grace of God go I. For all of us in this thing, and we're all going to face these issues at some point in our lives. And we all think about, stay out of my Medicare. And it really, what we're doing is saying we need to have the kinds of opportunities that Medicare affords for other people as well. Because this, thank God if you can live a long life, but some people aren't afforded that, that gift.
100 years ago, it seems, when Oregon passed their legislation that some characterized as rationing of care and some characterized as health care reform in the state of Oregon, we had the privilege of having policymakers from the state of Oregon come to Kansas City. We convened a round table to do an ethical analysis of that legislation before it was enacted. John Kitzhaber, who is an emergency room physician, who was then the president of the Senate, went on to be governor of Oregon twice, I believe, was part of that discussion. And I remember asking him how they did it. Why was it that Oregon had done this when all the other states were just wallowing around in the mud? And he said, we were able to shift the discussion from what I want to what we need. And the way they did that was through a series of town hall meetings, public discussions that were led by a group of people at the Department of Public Health who were exhausted and said, we need to begin talking about these questions. What is it that we owe to one another? What is it that we really value? Where are our priorities? Can we recognize that there are real limitations and how will we manage those? And I hope we're on the brink of doing that.
So does it start with enough people becoming exhausted that there's a willingness to engage?
And an alternative, a discussion about an alternative approach. Maybe that's
are
it.
Are we close?
I think
or
we're
it
there.
Starts with the political reality that this is the first step. And, you know, I heard a piece the other day that said there will still be the rancor from the right now on this issue since it went that way as opposed to the other. There will be this kind of in-your-face, from the left that said, you know, see, we told you so. But in the middle, there is this exhausted group of people who are independents who are going to say loudly, get on with it.
Let's move on.
It's over. Mm-hmm. And I'm hopeful that maybe that's a silence or maybe that's a vacuum that we need to be thinking about. But that's what I'm hoping. This is just the first step. There is a lot more to play out here.
And the Center for Practical Bioethics will lead the civil discussion, at least in the Kansas City area, in the coming weeks. We will have a number of different guests on this podcast over the next couple of weeks, and then we'll have a public forum sometime in late August, early September, and look for information on that. Our thanks to John Carney, President and CEO of the Center for Practical Bioethics, Myra Christopher, Kathleen Foley, Chair for Pain and Palliative Care at the Center, and Terry Rozelle, the Rosemary Flanagan Chair at the Center for Practical Bioethics. I'm Laurel LeBou. Thanks for listening to the Bioethics Channel.